Thundar the Barbarian. The year 1994. From out of space comes a runaway planet, hurtling between the Earth and the Moon, unleashing cosmic destruction. Man's civilization is cast in ruin. 2,000 years later, Earth is reborn. A strange new world rises from the old. A world of savagery, super science, and sorcery. But one man bursts his bonds to fight for justice. With his companions, Ookla the Mock and Princess Ariel, he pits his strength, his courage, and his fabulous sun sword against the forces of evil. He is Thundar, the Barbarian.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. This week we return to DragonCon 2015, to the American Sci-Fi Classics panel of Joe Crow and Gary Mitchell. Gary, of course, was on the show several weeks ago to preview that track. And today we're going to step in and visit the Thundar the Barbarian Saturday morning cartoon panel. This was an awesome panel, 8:30 in the morning on Saturday. It was easy to get around the hotels and get to this panel. And in it, we had quite a few people up on the podium and to watch the show. Now, I've got to relate a couple of quick things about it. One is, one of the more delightful things I've ever seen at Dragon Con is that track head Joe Crow set up a had a screen set up, had a projector set up, and we had a big audience for Saturday morning at 8:30. Actually showed an entire episode of the show to the audience. We showed the episode with the very Kirby-esque villain with two faces, and the head rotates around, and he has kind of the happy villain face and the mean villain face. I guess Janice, probably, that would make sense, is his name. And this was a pretty fun episode, and we got to watch it, and we were kind of making little jokes about it. I've cut all that part out, because you don't want to spend 30 minutes or whatever listening to us watching a TV show. Where the podcast picks up at the beginning is when the final credits are rolling. We've just watched the episode, the final credits are rolling on the screen, and some of the panelists are making our last few comments before we get into the actual probably 35-40 minute discussion of the series itself. So the other thing I wanted to mention before we get started is that one of the coolest things I've ever seen at Dragon Con, as I said, was that Joe Crow brought in breakfast cereal, milk, and bowls and spoons. And he actually poured himself a bowl of cereal, sat down in front of the screen, and was eating his cereal while watching Thundar the Barbarian. And that was awesome. That really did bring back the whole, you know, as a little kid watching Saturday morning cartoons and eating your Fruit Loops or whatever you were, or Rice Krispies or whatever you were eating. So that was pretty awesome to see. Now, normally I don't record the panelists' names for these podcasts based on, recordings of panels, because we introduce ourselves at the beginning of the panel. But again, since I lopped off the beginning, I think I may have accidentally or incidentally cropped out the names of the panelists. And for that, I apologize. But it was your standard American Sci-Fi Classics crew. I'm there. I believe Mike Faber's there. Joe Crow is there. Gary Mitchell pipes in probably. Maybe. I'm not positive about that. You'll hear some other people. But it's a good time. And I think you'll enjoy it. So, oh, one other thing I need to mention is that, and this was very successful during the panel, or really before the panel, is that I brought copies of the anthology that I created and wrote the introductory story for and edited, and it has stories by several other noted New Pulp adventure genre fiction authors, is a book called Blackthorn, Thunder on Mars. And what this book is, it came out a couple of years ago. This is our attempt to sort of mash up Thundar the Barbarian and John Carter of Mars. And it's got about five or six stories in it. My story is really more of a novella, about 20-something thousand words. It's the origin story. And then there's several others, James Palmer, Mark Busquet, Ian Watson, Sean Taylor, Bobby Nash. It's very Thundar the Barbarian-centric, but with an interesting series of twists that make it kind of, in a way, more like John Carter of Mars. So it's a really good combination of the two things. It's got illustrations all the way through it by Chris Kohler, who does the illustrations for my Sentinels novels. And so I really, really can't recommend it enough. I need you to go out, and I need you to go to Amazon and order it. It's on Kindle. It's in paperback. It may be Kindle Unlimited, so you can borrow it for free and read it. I'm not positive about that, but it's not very much money if you just buy a copy, a couple of $2 or $3 probably. And it's like 14 or 15 in paperback. But this book, I mentioned it at the beginning of the panel. I'd brought a stack of them with me, and people came up, and it sold out before the panel even began. Okay, so people really enjoyed this book. It's got a lot of good ratings on Amazon. So it's called Blackthorn, Thunder on Mars, created and edited by me. You can find it very, very easily. So check that out if you're a Thundar the Barbarian fan, or John Carter a fan, or just a fan of anthologies and short stories in their own little universe. So, okay, Demon Dogs and Lords of Light, let's get on with it. Here is the picking up during the post-show credits. Here's the Thundar the Barbarian panel from Dragon Con 2015 in Atlanta.
This is how you save money, kids. Your closing is the same as your intro.
Well, they figured the opening was so good, they might as well
close it. That's true, because that's all the introduction you get for the characters. So.
They come up with it, too.
You see a lot of familiar names from comic book writers and artists in the credits of this. Yeah. You'll recognize a bunch of names.
Marky Vanier.
Yep. Yeah, Steve Gerber.
Steve Gerber.
Marty Pascoe.
Mark Evanier.
Yep.
Yeah. Doug Wilde, who did Johnny Quest.
Yeah.
There's Kirby.
That's not right. I don't remember that one.
Oh, that's new. That's a turner.
Well, wow, that was awesome. I love that.
You gotta plug the cereal.
That was awesome.
Plug your cereal.
I've got free cereal. Come eat some.
This is for everyone.
It's the only thing to do on a Saturday morning when we're doing this kind of thing.
It's the only track that provides cereal.
These things are so much better when you're hopped up on Diggum Smacks. That's when the magic happens.
They don't even make those anymore. Now they're Honey Smacks. It's ridiculous. It is the same thing. Yeah.
It's like Super Sugar Crisp.
Super Sugar Crisp.
Yeah. You can't say that. You can't say sugar anymore.
Nope. Yes.
Yeah. Probably because I remember in the 80s on the USA Network, and I think they, I don't know if it was later, they combined it with Space Ghost. I think one other seemed like sort of in space. They all sort of, there's another one of the cartoon shorts that was set in space with,
I think they did the Herculoids.
Yeah, they combined them all, the Herculoids with
Thunder. That was another talk.
You know what it is? There was a show called Space Stars. It was an hour long. They made new episodes of Space Ghost and the Herculoids. And it also had Astro and the Space Mutts. Astro from the Jetsons. Thundar was not part of that. That was a cool show, though, Space Stars. And they overlapped. Like they would cross over all the segments, like over the course of the episode. Yeah. Characters from one segment would pop up in the other. It was a really cool show.
Yeah. Well, and what's funny about that is this feels very much like a Hanna-Barbera show with slightly better animation, but it's Ruby Spears.
It's Ruby Spears.
They left him
at the time.
Right.
Yeah. And those guys came from Hanna-Barbera.
You know, more recently, but it was its own separate thing.
Yeah. Ruby Spears were working for Hanna-Barbera, then they went off to do their own studio. So the Ruby Spears stuff looks very similar to the Hanna-Barbera stuff.
Kind of like Activision spinning off of the
car. Well, and definitely having Kirby and Toad be your designers because they had done so much Hanna-Barbera.
Alex Toth designed the three elite, the Super Friends, a bunch of Space Ghost, all
Hercules
that stuff.
Hercules, too.
Yes, on Thundar, Toth designed the lead characters, and then Kirby designed a lot of the villains and guest characters, and some obviously Gemini looks just like Darkseid. So many characters pop up that look very clearly Kirby on the show. It's wonderful.
Have you seen some of the Kirby illustrations from like the surface that he did for like the show Bible and stuff like that? Are very awesome.
Yeah, a lot of the backgrounds, especially like the villain's lair and the villain stronghold and all that, that very much looks Kirby-ish. It looks you know, there's a lot of Kirby in the 2,000 years later in the Broken Moon. And
That's like what he was... That's when he was wanting to get into movies and TV really bad because he wasn't being treated right by the comics, by either big comics company. And so he went out to, and Gerber brought him in.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that was Steve Gerber, who was the creator of Howard the Duck. Mm-hmm. He was the main creator of Thundar.
Thundar and Howard the Duck, how about that?
That's a crossover for the ages.
But both in need of a modern retelling.
Talking duck?
Does everybody know where the name Ookla comes from?
Yeah.
UCLA. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in the third, in the unaired third season, he beats up another one called Usk.
That's so funny, it's almost true.
Yeah, you see
that. I don't know if this is fan art or whatever, but it shows Thundar in space. I mean, was that like...
No, it has to.
Yeah, I don't think Thundar ever went into space on the show.
Like well, think about it, though. The best pilot was Ookla the Mock. How were they going to get in space? Or maybe get up to the stratosphere and he kicks the engine out of the space.
They would have survived the fall.
Yeah.
Well, if they landed on a horse.
That's true, if they landed on a horse.
Then a horse.
And the horse would be like... Cause the
no, no
the
they never go high enough.
Hours.
I just watched
and
it.
And the horse is like... Oh, wow. Here it comes.
He's got a pillow tied on his back.
What I love about Thundar is that, you know, most fantasy shows, they try to give at least sort of a well-rounded cast, right? But instead with Thundar, we've got Ariel, who's great. She's smart, and she can use magic and everything. Then we've got the big, strong one. And then we've got the other big, strong one, or dumb, strong one. And it's like, I'm not sure who is the dumber, stronger one or not. Because you think it'd be Ookla, but sometimes Thundar gives him a run for his money. So.
I guess it depends on after you translate what Ookla says.
Right.
Like, moron.
Why am I following this human?
Yeah, Ariel was definitely the brains of the operation. And she had studied Earth's history, and she was constantly explaining things to Thundar and Ookla. And the two of them, they would just wanted to dive into whatever they came across.
And how old are you? Son never fall out when he put on his arm and never fall off.
Magnetics.
And magic.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot of Star Wars influences on the show. Ookla was clearly the Chewbacca of the show.
And he was foisted on him against Gerber's will. Just had it to be, Gerber just wanted it to be Thundar and Ariel. And the producers are like, no, we need like a Wookiee dude.
You
know, he's like, fine. So
it makes everything better.
It does. It works. No. Absolutely.
The thing I like about Thundar is that he's basically like, what if Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer was thought out after the apocalypse? Because Ariel will explain like completely like what something is, and he's like, I do not understand this train that you have just told me about. I am just a caveman. Yes. You know, these things frighten and scare me. I will whack it with my sun sword.
The sun sword, I always considered a shameless ripoff of the lightsaber until Joe showed me Star Crash last night.
Yeah.
If you want to see a ripoff of a lightsaber, wow, Star Crash.
Yeah, and they described it in the show level as a lightning sword, and it was actually, there's like a Kirby drawing where it
It's like a bolt. The blade is like a bolt of light.
It kind
of
looks like that.
That's all well and good, but really, Star Wars had come out. It was super popular, and sure, they called it something different, made it look slightly different, but it was a lightsaber.
Why was it a short sword rapier? That's the part I couldn't get. It was short and thin.
Well, they wanted to be.
That's where you lost your sense of disbelief.
He was the barbarian prototype. I just couldn't figure why he had a big gigantic sword. That's the part I couldn't figure.
Maybe they didn't want. Of course, it was 1980, so every little kid had very hard plastic things to whack their little brothers with. So,
yep.
But yeah, there was no. It was 1980. So Thundar the Barbarian missed the merchandising boom of 83, 82. Yep. So there were not Thundar the Barbarian action figures until we were adults. Yep. And so I had to buy them, of course. There were action figures? Yes.
Where was I?
It's fairly recently, though.
No, okay. Not back then.
2004, I think.
Yeah, they're 10 years ago.
They're on the secondary market now.
Yeah. Yeah.
If only Mego had made Thundar dolls.
Amigo,
Thundar would have big oven mitt.
Yes.
Well, this is a show that if it had.
It isn't something that he would have had originally. He had to have found that somewhere. He wouldn't have been buried. Oh, let me make this sword of light. No. He found that in some kind of temple or something.
Well, I think Ariel gave it to him.
Yeah.
When she rescued him from Nick Slaver? Sabian, the evil wizard. I mean, Sabian, the evil wizard.
Sabian.
This is all inference from the minute and a half intro.
Yes.
Bursts his bond.
Well, and
there was an episode where his sword got stolen. He had to reclaim it by putting it in a lava pool. Mm. So there was something else going on.
Wasn't there something where he had to recharge it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one. Well, that's what's so cool, too, and we see it here. There's always, when the episode starts, they're already right in the middle of doing something. They're running from danger or running towards it, and we've got to do this thing, and we never know why.
They are riding harder.
Well, because there's stuff that's happening in between, you know, the episodes that they're having, which is kind of, I think, kind of cool.
It's one of the strengths of the series, I think, that it hints at a larger world.
Absolutely.
Through its very small amounts that it's able to show.
Yeah.
I also love that just with, you know, on horseback, you know, from day to day, they're able to cross from, like, New York to Florida.
Oh, yeah. You know? One episode, they're in Washington. One episode, they're in Chicago. They're in Las Vegas.
They went to London.
After the cataclysm, just all the land masses just went.
But the backgrounds, obviously, are so incredible. And, like, we saw the Jaws poster. There's a bunch of little touches like that through the whole thing. But there's an episode where... you see another Jaws poster, and there's a poster next to it for Star Wars Revenge of the Jedi.
Ooh.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Definitely an alternate universe.
Revenge of the Jedi.
This just seems to me, this is a show that if it had been done just a tiny bit more grown up, right, just a tiny bit, and done and in today's TV channels that are very specialized, it could have been successful for years. Because it was ahead of its time, and it was not quite what you would think you'd get from Saturday morning TV in 1980, right?
It was
more sophisticated.
Between the Saturday morning shows of the 70s and the ones that we would get later
right.
in the 80s, especially in syndication, in terms of storytelling.
Yeah.
And you look just like He-Man.
but Thundar also never really... It never moved beyond this. I mean, there weren't Thundar comics, and there weren't Thundar books, and, you know...
Which, had it come out later, that there would have been. There would have had to have been a toy tie-in, and lunchboxes, and the whole thing.
How was it not more successful, though? I mean, was it just that it was reaching an audience that mostly wasn't interested in it at the time?
It was just Saturday morning. Nobody... Yeah.
They canceled everything in a hurry on Saturday morning, didn't they?
Yeah.
If memory serves, it was fairly popular, but there were people at the network that didn't like it. Because I actually rewatched Thundar about 2 months ago, and because I was on like a Thundar binge, basically, I went. There's a lot of interviews with some of the writers and stuff that are available online, some of which that were in print, but some were just with blogs. So there's a lot of information that's come out in recent years about where they wanted to take the show, and there just wasn't a heck of a lot of interest on part of the network in continuing it, and they had so little money in the first place to make the show that it just kind of fizzled.
And there were ideas for where they wanted to take it in the future, that they were going to maybe flash it forward a bit. And Thundar is now a king, and his son is continuing the adventures.
Is his son named Little Thundy?
It was in the Scrappy Doo of Thundar.
Who's his mama?
Who is the mama?
Ariel was supposed to be the queen.
Well, there you go.
Well, saying, she was a princess.
She is apparently a princess, even though we never know of what.
there's some fascinating stuff that's out there, including scans from like the show Bible. Now that stuff I think came from what was the magazine that Starlog used to put out that was comics related?
Comic Scene.
There were some scans from an old issue of Comic Scene and an interview. That you can find online. You can find the scans and the interview. There's some great information out there.
It would be fun if somebody like IDW could get the rights and comic version.
Yes.
What
is
the state of the rights? Does anybody know?
Hanna-Barbera owns
it. Yeah.
But I've heard that it was asked repeatedly to get rights to do something else with it, and they turned it down all the time.
Yeah, it's surprising just with all the affection that people have for the show, and since they reboot everything, that it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. I think eventually it's going
to
happen.
It has
to. They got around to... they'll get around to everything.
Yes.
If they redo it the way they redid Scooby-Doo, then there'll be like an overt love interest going on between Thundar and Ariel. But Thundar will be like, no, I have to hang out with Ookla, so I can't be with you, baby. And then she's going to be like, no, you and your stupid mock, no. If you sing the new Scooby-Doo, that's what it is. It's Velma trying to get with Shaggy, and Shaggy's like, no, me and Scooby are buddies. I can't be with you, girl. I'm just watching it. My little girl's watching. I'm going, what have they done to Scooby-Doo? It's a teen romance and a dog.
But what they were going to do, they were going to update the animation but have the same soundtrack. All the original voices and everything. It was just basically just redoing the animation.
What?
One thing I learned, speaking of the voices, when I was looking at the show recently, there's a couple of episodes where they meet a young girl named Ty, which they refer to her as a swamp urchin.
Mm-hmm.
This girl, that's what they call her on the show. She's a swamp urchin. Yeah, she was in two episodes, Ty. She was voiced by Nancy McKeon, who was Joe on Facts of Life.
Mm-hmm.
So this would have been like right before she went to Facts of
Life.
And
honestly, Joe on Facts of Life was kind of a swamp urchin.
She was, yeah. In real life, she was a swamp urchin.
It ties back into Scooby-Doo because Mindy Cohn voices Velma now.
Yes, it all comes back to the Facts of Life, people. That's what we're saying. The Facts of Life are all about you.
That's
all of you.
That's right. I hadn't thought about that. Wow.
Questions, anybody? That we haven't...
Wait, everybody's letting that Facts of Life.
I will take any question about the Facts of Life. Also.
What's Tootie up to these days?
The thing is, the music on Thundar was actually pretty good. The problem was it was the same every episode.
Yeah. And that's how it worked in Saturday Morning. I've watched so much Super Friends in the last few years that sometimes the Super Friends music just runs through my head because it's just over and over you hear those same...
That Conan was actually made after Conan the Barbarian was made after this.
Yeah.
Because I was like, are they trying to riff a little bit on the Conan theme? But they're not. And I just thought it was kind of cool that it just kind of sounds similar.
Every time Spike turned on the radio or Blaster started playing a song on Transformers, it was always the same song, Cold Slither.
Yeah, reused footage. That's one of those things, too. We never noticed it as a kid.
Yeah, we do.
But then you binge watch. I never really paid that much attention to it. But you binge watch these shows now, and it's like, you know, you realize, wow, over half of this is like...
that's how they saved money.
And hey, it worked for Battlestar Galactica. It worked for Saturday.
It worked. Well, even like Batman did it, and Green Hornet did it. You know, they only drove out of the Batcave once.
At the same time of day.
Every day.
There was always the same three women crossing the street when the Batmobile pulled up to the police station.
That's the corner they worked. Business in town.
Yeah.
That was
their corner, if you know what I mean.
I have no idea.
The Thundar the Barbarian, I think, was the last real, because Ruby Spears came in as sort of like the Thundar, the year of Thundar was the first year that a non-Hanna-Barbera or Filmation company got something on Saturday morning, more or less. Except, you know, Sid and Marty Krofft, but more or less.
Well,
and
Patty Freeling did some stuff.
Yeah, yeah, there's always a few others in the mix, but it was others, mostly Hanna-Barbera.
It was isolated, sure.
Yep.
But the I think well, you touched on this earlier. It was kind of the end or a bridge between the 70s cartoons of Johnny Quest, which were terrific, and the Munchy Cheese, which also came on, I think, in 81. And it's Rubik the Amazing Cube.
it's the bridge between this, the weird, original, whacked-out 70s Hanna-Barbera stuff and the, we got a toy, let's make a cartoon stuff.
Yeah.
Well, which I have to say, I'm not against.
Yeah. Neither am I. I mean, that's not a bad thing. It's just, I mean, that's just what it was back then.
Yeah, when you think about it, like, Thundar kind of dodged the bullet by not being on Filmation, and that if it was a Filmation show, there would have been little cute sidekick characters following him around everywhere. That's what they did on Black Star and Flash Gordon.
What did we learn from Secret of the Black Pearl just then? Was there a lesson?
Don't do drugs, kids.
But never put a nuke light in the pilot seat.
Never put a Mohawk.
Never find old men in the woods and take anything.
No. But the interesting thing about Thundar also is that, you know, I came to it actually later. I watched it on the USA Cartoon Express. And, I mean, this is a show that remained in syndication throughout the 80s and even into the early 90s. Then it kind of dropped off for a while, then it came back with Boomerang when Boomerang, you know, became a channel. But, you know, so this show has been on for so long, and I think that the reason is, I watched everything that the Cartoon Express had. This was stood head and shoulders taller than all of those other, you know, cartoons. And
to me, that was one when you're flipping channels.
Right.
If you see, you're in the middle of an episode or see the titles, just stop and park.
I just have to show you that the networks don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never, stop on C-Lab 2020 if I'm flipping through channels, right? But if I'm flipping through channels in Thundar, it's like, oh, I'm saying, you know, I want to see the rest of the Thundar episode.
This was around the time, too. I mean, Saturday morning, probably because of Star Wars, there were a lot of sci-fi cartoons around this time. I mean, even where they were doing things like, we're going to put Gilligan's Island in space.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gilligan's Planet. Yeah. The Fonz went into space.
Did he go into space or did he time travel?
Yeah, he time traveled.
Oh, okay. They were in a flying saucer, but
they traveled through time.
Fonzie met a girl with a flying saucer. Her name was Cupcake.
That's right.
They had a dog named Mr. Cool.
Mr. Cool.
In a leather jacket.
Yeah.
And also
did he go like E?
After the rousing success of Fonz and the Happy Days Gang, they did a Laverne and Shirley cartoon.
Yep. They were in the Army.
In the Army. Oh, where their sergeant, their drill instructor, was a pig. He was a talking pig.
Why not?
He? They had a male drill sergeant?
Sure.
I didn't see that one.
I'm having a horrible flashback from my childhood now. I'd put all this in a happy place away. It's all coming back out now. No. I'd forgotten the pig. Oh, man.
The Saturday morning science fiction that just predates Thundar a little bit that I loved was on Filmation, the live-action stuff they did, trilogy of wonderful shows. The science fiction, though, I love Shazam and Isis, but after that, they did Arc 2, which is on the wall over there, I think, and then Space Academy, and then Jason of Star Command.
Yep. Han Solo on Saturday.
Those are fun shows. Those are cool live-action.
And I've watched Jason of Star Command. It's also on DVD. It came out just a few years ago.
Yes.
And there are connections between the two, Jason of Star Command and Space Academy.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Was a spinoff.
And from what I remember watching, the space station on Space Academy, they turned it, and now it's Jason of Star Command.
In fact, on one of those shows, Space Academy, one of the shows, maybe both of them, they actually repurposed part of the set from Arc 2.
Yeah.
They turned that into one of the spaceships they used on those later. Filmation reused everything.
Got their money's worth.
And they managed to rent Robbie the Robot for one of their episodes.
Yes, they did. That was all. I remember that one. Yeah.
Someone in the non-classics track been trapped there all night.
There's some small weapons fire going on in the corner.
Yeah,
like we're all fascinated by this. Yeah.
What could it possibly be?
Expecting Thundar to come walking in now.
What is this knocking you speak of?
Fanny.
I just swipe with my sun sword and the door crumbles.
Crumbles, yes.
Oh, my favorite, the people with the, in the suspended animation, that his solution to get them out of suspended animation is to smash the capsules with his sun sword. And they thaw out like that.
What harm could it do him?
1,000 feet, I guess.
No joke, I'm not kidding. Just now, that knock on the door... Tech Ops was worried about us. I love Tech Ops. They're the best.
They know this track, don't they, if they're worried about us?
Well, yesterday we had some Tech Ops issues, and I went to get them, and when I brought them back, both times the guys had fixed it while I was going to get them. So I'm sure the Tech Ops is like, oh my god, another call from a sci-fi class.
Do they live inside the walls?
Yes. Right there.
Yeah, that's...
Just pop out of that little door-looking thing over there.
The stairs.
They're like Chris Elliott under the stairs.
Yeah.
David Letterman. There's so much. What was your favorite? You guys' favorite Saturday morning sci-fi thing?
Space Ghost.
Of course, Space Ghost.
Thundar.
Oh yeah, definitely Thundar.
I love Thundar. My favorite, probably Hanna-Barbera, has got to be Herculoids.
I was just going to say Herculoids.
Yeah.
We got to do a Herculoids panel next year.
Ooh, that'd
yes,
be great.
Yes. Put me on that.
Okay, all right. Hang on. I got a pen. It's
like, I'll remember that.
Were there plans for like a spin-off, like the final episode? Like the trio of...
Yeah, there were like three, like, almost like three kind of... pilot episodes hidden in the Thundar.
Backdoor pilots?
What? Tell me more. Mm.
Well, I know, like the last episode, Thundar and Company, they really don't do anything. They find like a barbarian from their time, and like an Egyptian princess in hibernation, and a model.
You are correct. That was supposed to be a backdoor pilot.
It was, okay.
Wow.
And, like, they stay together to go back to like present day 1980 to, I don't know, fight crime.
They went back in time in one episode. They went back to like 1980 and met like a 1980s kid, and then left her there to die in 14 years at the end of the episode. Like, something's coming in 14 years, chicken.
There you go.
Enjoy it.
Enjoy the
boom,
apocalypse.
We're out of here.
So much as say, hey, in 14 years, you might want to shelter in place.
Yeah. You might want to, get under like a solid object.
You think about the timing, though, like, all the way through the 80s.
But don't fret. It's only 14 years. Just live your life.
You have
fine.
Your whole 14
all,
years ahead.
All through the 80s, the Cold War, the threat of the Soviet Union and nuclear war, 1989 and 1990, the Cold War ends. We're all safe. It's all good. 4 years later, boom.
A rogue planet.
Rogue planet.
There was talk when they were conceiving of the show how they were going to come about with this post-apocalyptic universe that they now dwell in. And they quickly decided against the idea of like a post-atomic holocaust because... too many people were actually, that was actually still a concern.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were terrified back then.
Absolutely. They decided to avoid that and throw in a whole natural disaster angle. They thought that
there's nothing we can do about that.
Right. If you watch that scene, because obviously the big visual is the moon splitting up, but the atmosphere of the Earth gets sucked away
right.
as well.
It does.
Yeah.
No wonder things are so bad.
Yeah.
And what was up with late 70s and the moon? The Space 1999, the freaking moon's busted up then.
We really wanted to get rid of the moon back then. It almost worked.
And remember how everybody thought the 90s was the far distant future.
Yeah.
Everything bad that would happen way early. Yeah. It made sense, I think, to pick about that era of 94 because they didn't want to go too far. They didn't want to be too soon. It can't be like in 1982. And then
because the show might last at least that long.
Yeah, but also,
that was going
to
happen.
But they couldn't go too far into the future because they wanted the remains of civilization to be the present day.
Recognizable,
like thousands of years later.
I know, that was a problem I always had, is I think they went too far in the future, because like the Jaws poster is still colorful. That's like if we find a Roman poster right today and it looks like they just painted it. I'm like,
there's
come on.
There's an episode where Ookla finds a comic book in the dirt outside and reading it. Wow, it wasn't even poly.
Put that on the premium paper.
Yeah.
That's
well,
a slick.
The poly bag had already decayed and fallen apart. Yeah. The comic was still...
The day before, right? Right. The day before, the plastic bag had finally given it up.
It was CCG graded.
It was.
And it was one of Rob Lee's
films. Covers
oh, God.
Yeah. 500, 2,000 years.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. It's like, he's like, I have the last comic book. Rob Liefeld.
but yeah, about the year thing, I'm almost wondering, because I'm actually going back and looking at the Shannara books that Terry Brooks did, which the first one was in 1977. He does the same thing. Cataclysm, kind of unspecified, he doesn't say what causes it. 2,000 years later, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic world. There's there's science and there's sorcery living side by side, and you know, some of the denizens of the world have mutated into some of the creatures of old, like trolls and dwarves and things like that. And so I sometimes wonder if Thundar had pulled the 2,000 years. You know, somebody that was on the writing team there had read the Shannara.
I would not be surprised. Mm. Yeah. That sounds, yeah. Well, isn't there even like a technical
there, there's that, and there's also the Planet of the Apes. So.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah,
yeah, they certainly the shot in here where we first see the Statue of Liberty.
Very,
very reminiscent of how they, yeah.
How far in the future was, I don't remember, how far in the future
it
was
a
Planet
few thousand.
Of the Apes set?
A couple thousand?
Yeah. I think they said 2,000 years later, so.
Wait, hang on, let me see if I can ditch you. 2,000 years later, what has happened to man?
A planet where apes evolved from men?
That's actually later today. We're actually doing a planet.
Yes, we are.
What about
my favorite episode of the Twilight Zone ever?
11:30? Yeah, it was. You go to YouTube. Somebody did a cut of the Planet of the Apes movie. As a Twilight Zone episode.
Oh my God.
Because it was written by Rod Serling.
Yeah, sure.
So the movie Planet of the Apes was written by Rod Serling. So sidebar. But yeah,
come back for that panel later.
Another fun thing that I discovered years ago and forgot about completely, a fan did a Thunder of the Barbarian role playing game.
Wow.
And it
no
is
way.
Still online.
It's
did you post a link
under,
to that?
Under the Broken Moon.
Oh, nice.
Because I want to play it, like, right now, more than I did.
What are the stats on the, like, constitution of the horses? They're indestructible, right?
It's like 800 million.
The horse, what is
Yeah, I know. 2,000 hit points.
He should have jumped out of the tower, landed on the horse. The horse somehow survives. Are you all right, Thundar?
I'm fine.
It's
okay. That's true.
Probably wearing a
long
clothes. It was something of the era, because even in V, Mark Singer attacks a guy by sliding down a thing with his legs like this, and it's the guy in his face with the cross.
Well, as we were watching the episode, James is like, isn't it funny how they're riding bareback, but Ookla has the saddle?
Saddle and rein.
It's more of a protection for the horse than for Ookla.
And crazy mutant horse.
Yeah, right. I love the mutant horse.
With a beak.
The horse had a beak, you guys.
And a big flat beaver tail.
Why didn't? So some horses mutated into Ookla the Mock level horses. That's not the one Thundar jumps on. Thundar jumps on old Becky.
Just a regular
Those
horse.
Horses haven't evolved.
Well, he's a barbarian because he was raised by horses.
Yes. Did anybody else? Of course, we all did it with $6 Million Man, but did anybody draw the sun sword on your wrist when you were playing?
No.
In the backyard?
Just you, Joe.
Just me.
Just me.
And then a couple years later, of course, I was doing the manimal.
but
also
I did,
another panel.
I did have like a plastic like big dagger handle, and the dagger part broke off because I hit my brother with it. And my sword, like I would. You know.
I'm on my feet to do a Planet of the Apes, though. Walk around with gloves.
That is awesome. You win, sir. You win.
You guys aren't aware the current Ninja Turtles cartoon on Nickelodeon, the show that they watch
is Krognar the Barbarian.
Yeah. Yeah. What?
Yeah. They also watched a Voltron ripoff.
They used to have the Voltron one.
Yes. That show is awesome.
That show was fantastic.
So, yeah. So, so, 94. What was happening in 94 that broke apart the moon?
My daughter was born that year.
I think the OJ trial broke apart the moon.
That's perfect.
Can you imagine? CNN is best breaking news. We're about to present the OJ trial. Oh, God!
Right in the tsunami.
It's the only thing that would have preempted the OJ trial.
If the runaway planet won't fit, you must acquit.
Oh, no.
Sorry, but I think that the moon would have broken up and nobody would have noticed.
It would explain Al Gore a lot. Yeah. Climate change is real, you guys. The moon's going to break apart, I swear.
Oh, right.
And then the atmosphere's just going to go... Psh.
Fox News blames gay marriage.
I think Al Gore's documentary was called A Barbaric Truth. And then there's him in front of a green screen going, you guys, in a couple of thousand years...
I told you.
A couple of thousand years, there's going to be horses with beaks.
And you're going to be running from rats wearing scarves.
The rats were wearing scarves. And you guys, let's just take a moment. We just watched... some guys fight the Statue of Liberty that shot fireballs. That was amazing.
It doesn't get any cooler than that.
It doesn't. This show is... this year is the 35th anniversary of it, and I... Whenever I talk about anniversaries on the track, people go, oh, now I feel old. I don't feel old. I feel awesome. Yeah. This show is amazing.
It was.
And we're all in on the ground floor of whenever that reboot happens. Because it's gonna, at the rate they're churning through reboots, they're gonna get to Thundar eventually.
Since this isn't a lot of podcasts, there are how many writers on this panel that would probably work on it?
Well, we worked on the mashup, yeah.
I sort of already did.
I would love to write the IDW comic. Let's make it happen, people.
Let's start writing IDWs and get those rights.
Yes.
They may already have them. No, maybe it's Boom, because all the Cartoon Network stuff went to a different company.
Right.
Yeah.
So I bet Thundar's sitting in a file drawer somewhere.
Because IDW's got more of the Hasbro stuff.
Yeah. Star Trooper Titions now. Yeah, that's true.
Star Petitions now.
Yeah.
Oh, and another Thundar-influenced thing. There's a comedy rock band called Ookla the Mop.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're great. They're really good.
They I don't think there's a ton of Thundar the Barbarian songs that they do, and I was like, oh, come on! You have to with a name like Ookla the Mock.
Don't they just grunt?
They could do it.
That's the whole song.
They could do it all in mock.
That's it. That's all their albums.
But how cool was the job of the guy though that voiced Ookla? I mean,
that was Frank Welker, you know, who did so many stuff for Hanna-Barbera.
That's easy.
They meticulously worked out the mock language so that every sound he made actually meant something.
Guys, we're out of time, but thank you guys so
much. Thank you.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.